Hello and welcome back to the Footy Fix podcast. I am your host, Ben Botello. There's plenty of action across Europe this past week. Title and top four races really heated up, and as viewers, we definitely got our money's worth. So with any further ado, let's get right into it, starting out with the Premier League. Let's go with Arsenal versus Wolves. The match happened midweek. It ended 2-1 for the Gunners, and they scored a 95th minute goal. Own goal by Jose Sa, Lacazette's goal. Call it what you want, they still won the game. In my opinion, I really thought that early goal from Wolves was going to take them through to the end of the match and get a huge win. Of course, we all know they lost against a 10-man Arsenal about 2 weeks prior, so this was sort of a revenge match. Unfortunately, an 82nd equalizer from Nicolas Pepe, and of course, that goal in injury time set Arsenal over the edge. But I gotta say it, throughout the whole 90 plus 5, whatever you want to call it, Arsenal were relentless. And this is a team on the spin here. We've been used to trolling Arsenal over the past few years. We've been used to seeing some very lackluster football. Obviously, results that have made them miss out on the top four and even in cases miss out on the Europa League. But this year, with no European football on their schedule, with pretty much playing week to week, you know what your goals are, we're playing in the Prem, and that's it. That's the only thing we're competing for. As bad as that is, it's actually quite good in their case because it's really helping them push to the top four. And we'll talk about the game differences and the games in hand that they have later as we go through the matches. Next up on the slate, we had a very underwhelming game. Manchester United versus Watford ended 0-0, and honestly, I don't know what's going on with Manchester United right now. Watching that game, Bruno, Cristiano Ronaldo missing every type of chance. A sitter, a wide open net, a virtual tap-in, a little bit of range. Obviously, Ronaldo hit that post. He scored an offside goal. But, you know, at the end of the day, there was nothing on the scoreboard to show for it. And it looked like Man U, that it's just not their year. It's not their year. Wasn't their year for the FA Cup. Certainly not their year for the Premier League. And despite all the summer signings and all the success, you know, we thought they would have with Ronaldo, Sancho, Varane into this team, they're looking like a Europa League team or worse. And I just don't understand how, obviously the fans aren't comfortable, but how can you live with yourself in this current state when you're drawing games, and in some cases losing games, against bottom-of-the-table teams? And how are we supposed to take this team seriously when they're just not playing well enough? They're not playing well enough is an understatement. They are playing so poorly, and there's no team cohesion. We saw against Watford a game, it was very unusual. We saw the defense play well and the offense play poorly. And it's usually the other way around, right? The usual scoreline of a Man United game, I like to think in recent memory, is like a 4-2 against Leeds, right? The 2-0 up very quickly. The front four, if you want to call it, are flying. And then the defense gets leaky. And then eventually their offensive talent takes them through the game. This was not the case. And there were plenty of chances created. And it just goes back to Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano Ronaldo missing those chances. And I don't know. Is a new striker needed? Like, Ronaldo has been in some very poor form as of late. Obviously, he's got that one goal in 2022, the stunner against Brighton. But other than that, he's got absolutely nothing to show for it. And at the beginning of the season, and even a little bit now, a lot of pundits, a lot of people, they talk about the fact how when Ronaldo doesn't score, he doesn't do much else, really. So he's only there for his goals. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that Ronaldo is 37 years old now. He knows his place in the team. He knows he can work a little bit less. And obviously the manager and the players accept that because it's Cristiano Ronaldo. You're going to have to accept it. But even with that being said, his work rate is still good from what I see. He still plays into that pressing style, and he presses, and he passes a lot more. He's a very big distributor of the ball, despite only having 3 assists on the season so far. But then again, you know, you are Cristiano Ronaldo. You have to be putting the ball in the back of the net. And I think that that game against Watford was a combination of his age, which he looked his age, and he had no luck. And I think that was accentuated by the fact that he hit a post, sort of an inside of a post, within the first 10 minutes. And I think when you see his body language and you see the way that he's just, it wasn't his day. It was one of those days where you're not going to put anything in the back of the net. And unfortunately for his case, it's been like that. There's been a lot of those days in recent memory. So new striker needed, new signings. I think we have to focus on, for me, looking obviously from the outside in, I look at Manchester United and I see that, you know, I see a lack of talent in the midfield, particularly in a defensive midfielder. I see a frail back line, despite Raphael Varane being there. And obviously with Ronaldo aging, they're going to need an out-and-out number nine. Now, if that's Harry Kane, if that's Isak, the Swedish wonder kid, or if that's somebody else, doesn't matter who it is, but it needs to be someone. You know, we've seen Cavani and his injury record just keep on piling up, and he's missing game after game after game. And there's some hope there, and then there's not. It's taken away. But regardless, they need to get somebody younger for that role. And before all the controversy and obviously the terrible thing that Mason Greenwood has done, it was going to be him. Now, obviously, it's not going to be him anymore for good reason. But they need to get somebody in that number nine spot. And another thing here is that, you know, we can go back to Ronaldo missing and being in bad form. He's played a lot of games recently, and a lot of games that some say he should have rested, and I do think he should have rested, but that wasn't an option for him because Cavani was injured as well. But if you're Ralf Rangnick, you have a deep enough team, sort of, where you can put Rashford at the nine, or you can play, you know, two strikers up top, and it can be Rashford and Sancho, and they can play as wingers. There's a lot of different things you can do with this team. They have a lot of offensive talent, and I think that somewhere along the way, either against, you know, Leeds or Watford, or even way back to Middlesbrough, their loss in the FA Cup, you got to rest Ronaldo. And typically, after watching him for a very long time, you see that when you rest him, and when he's in bad form, he comes back, he scores a brace, gets a goal and assist, something to end the drought. Anyways, moving on, Tottenham Hotspur 4, Leeds 0. Obviously, the big story coming out of this one is that Marcelo Bielsa has been sacked, and they're going to bring in the American coach from Leipzig, Jesse Marsh, to replace him. But let's focus on the match here. Harry Kane, Heung-Min Son, absolutely flying. After a very slow start to the season, I might add, now it looks they're getting into their groove. You know, they broke that record, the highest scoring duo in Premier League history, which is, it was a little bit crazy to think about, to be honest. I didn't know it was that, you know, it wasn't that many accumulated goals and assists. I didn't know that. And it was only 36. The record was Lampard and Drogba held it, obviously two legends of Chelsea. But I didn't know it was like such an easily attainable record. I mean, I felt as if going into the season anyway, I felt that Bruno and Ronaldo could have broken that because, you know, they are two players of quality. But then again, you look at Harry Kane, you look at Son, two fantastic players, so much chemistry between the two of them, only a matter of time. Son scoring in this one, Harry Kane getting a goal and assist, and Juventus product, Dejan Kulusevski, scoring as well. Now, we know him from getting the assist for Harry Kane's header, the winning goal against Manchester City, and now he's got a goal in this one. I got to say, Tottenham really putting in some good performances that is really going to help them get to that top four position. Now, the problem is that they're very inconsistent, right? They'll win against Leeds 4-0. They'll win against City in a very exciting fashion, and then on the spin they'll lose to Burnley or they'll lose to whoever. And I think that's their problem. I think if they start getting some results here, more results I should say, they could really be in the race for this top four position, a little in a better position, I should say. Moving on to Manchester City versus Everton. City took that 1-0 in what was a very dramatic game. City controlled the possession as usual. They controlled most of the game, but I have to give Everton some props here. Give credit where credit is due. They played their best game of the season by a landslide. Everton have really dropped off this season. They're almost in that relegation battle. And with Frank Lampard coming in, some hope was restored. Obviously, they have Dele Alli on permanent deal. They got Donny van de Beek from Manchester United on a loan. So they added some skill. And we were all hoping that Everton was going to climb from the bottom, maybe get to, you know, middle of the table, maybe even eighth, something like that. It's just not working out for them. And I thought that they were very unlucky. Even the way that Phil Foden scored the goal, it went through a pair of legs, it took a couple bounces, and then it kind of just landed on him and was presented on a silver platter. Sort of a tap-in. Now, the controversy here is the Rodri handball. And for me, it was absolutely, unequivocally, clearly a handball. Should have been a penalty. Now, here's my question. Is that why are we implementing VAR if it's not going to work? The whole point of this system was to clarify calls. And VAR did just that. It absolutely clarified the call. You see the ball hitting Rodri's arm, you can play it in real time, you can play it in slow motion, you can change the angle. The decision, what you see, is a handball. You see the handball, you administer the penalty, it's most likely 1-1, and then all of this BS is over. But instead, we are now questioning the officials, we are now questioning a sort of bias towards Manchester City. And I think it's fair. I think it's totally fair because that was just, it was blatant. It's a simple rule, right? It's a simple rule. When you're an outfield player on a football pitch, you cannot use your hand to touch the ball. And Rodri did exactly that. And it was accidental. Still, doesn't matter if it's accidental on purpose. That just changes the degree of the offense, right? If it's an accident, maybe you'll get a yellow. If it's on purpose, you're most likely going to get a red or even a yellow if some refs feel, you know, a little bit relaxed that day. But this one, definitely a penalty to Everton, and I feel that they did deserve a point, at least from that game, because they played brilliantly. Our final matchup we're going to talk about, Wolves again, ironically, against West Ham. That one ended 1-0. West Ham took it, which is a huge loss for Wolves. That is now two losses on the spin. In a time that was looking really, really promising for them. I mean, I find with Wolves, and it was the same case against Arsenal, they dominated possession. This one, they had 61% possession throughout the entire game. I don't think people understand how difficult that is to get. 61% possession is a lot of time on the ball. But, you know, we're seeing this again. They don't really know what to do with it. And it happens. But, you know, for a team like Wolves to had, they were in such good form there for a while. You look at their form chart. They won two games on the spin, and then it was that loss against Arsenal, and now the loss against West Ham. So just, you know, very heartbreaking. I thought this was a very promising team. I really thought they're honestly still in contention for the top four. However, with losses against West Ham, two losses against Arsenal, it's looking increasingly unlikely for them. But now that we've gone through the matches, let's take a look at the Premier League table, because a lot of very exciting things happened this weekend. A lot of shifts. And if we look at here, City's loss to Tottenham, which obviously happened last week, that leaves them one game ahead of Liverpool, 6 points ahead. Now, if Liverpool win that game that they have in hand, they go 63 points. City are at 66. And the title race is fully back on. Their last five games, they've lost the one against Tottenham, and they got the draw. So we're seeing, you know, tough things here for City. Tough run of form, kind of chopping at their own lead, shooting themselves in the foot a little bit. You look at Liverpool second down the table, 5 wins in their last 5 games. Which is why they're that close to City. They've been the most consistent team the last few weeks in the Premier League, without a doubt. Then we move a little bit down. We have Chelsea in third, Manchester United in fourth, right behind them. Chelsea have 2 games on Man U, and they have a 3-point cushion. So that spot is pretty much done and dusted. I don't think, despite their form, obviously the last five, they got 2 wins, 2 draws, and a loss. I don't think that they will lose that spot. Obviously, if they keep on playing mediocre, then we could see a shift, but I doubt that Man United will be the team to take over third position. You look at Man U on fourth position at 47 points, and from fourth until eighth, honestly, completely up for grabs here. And here's where it gets a little tricky, so bear with me here. Manchester United, 47 points, 27 games played. West Ham in fifth, 27 games played, 45 points. Arsenal, 24 games played, 45 points. Tottenham Hotspur, 25 games played, 42 points. Wolves, 26 games played, 40 points. So overall, very tight, very, very tight race for that top four spot. Now, as a Man U fan, and obviously as a West Ham fan, you're going to look at the teams behind you. Wolves have 1 game in hand. Tottenham have 2 games in hand. And Arsenal have 3 games in hand. And especially Arsenal with the form they're in, this is not a very good situation for the Red Devils and their supporters. Only having that 2-point cushion with a potential 9 points in the balance is a spot you do not want to be in. We can look at Man United's schedule. Upcoming games, they have Manchester City this Sunday. Then they have Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, and Arsenal. That is their March. 4 of the biggest games of the season. Because, you know, let's assume the worst for a minute, right? Let's say they lose that tie against Atletico Madrid. Their season is virtually done. No Champions Leagues. There's nothing to win. There's nothing left available to win for this team, even though we know they're not going to win anything. But then you still got to play Liverpool. You still got to play Man City. You still got to play Arsenal. They won against Arsenal 3-2. Ronaldo scored a brace there. Fantastic game. They got walloped by Liverpool 5-0. And then they lost against City 2-0 in what was sort of a more embarrassing loss than Liverpool won, just because it felt like Manchester City were playing with them. We're playing with United. This is potentially, I'm not going to be pessimistic here, but this is potentially 4 losses in a row for this team. I don't think it'll happen, but it is within the realm of possibility. And I'll tell you what, I don't think I see United winning against Liverpool. I don't think I see them winning against Manchester City. I think that might be a draw, given City's form. I do see them winning against Atletico Madrid. I will admit that. I see them going on to the quarterfinals. And I see a draw against Arsenal. I see 2 points out of a possible 9 in terms of the Premier League fixtures, which is actually pretty good considering who they're facing. But then again, right? Like, you got to get the points. They're 27 games into the season in terms of their record, right? It's 11 games left. You got it. That's 33 points in the balance. Their best case scenario, they end this season with 80 points. 80 points. Which, can that get them top four? I don't know. Can that get them European football? I don't know. It's possible, but also when you look at the way Arsenal are playing, when you look at the way Tottenham are playing, especially since Kane and Son have really gotten it together, I don't know if it's possible. And quite frankly, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. So that's the Premier League wrapped up for you quickly, sort of quickly. Let's move on to Serie A, where we're seeing a lot of the same, right? A very tight title race. The top four race is scintillating at that. But we're seeing a little bit more of a gap between, you know, the top three down to the bottom, you know, four to eight, right? Different. Big difference in points. So we'll start off with the two games that happened midweek. Both Milan teams played. Both Milan teams drew. AC Milan drew against 14th place Udinese. And even more embarrassing, Inter Milan, formerly league leaders, drew against 19th placed Genoa. It's a tale of two teams here. Obviously, Milan, we can put out the positives. Rafael Leao scores again. Very, very good player he's turning into. I would love to see him play for Portugal on the national stage. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, given the caliber of talent they have for that potential front three. But he's got 8 goals this season in Serie A, 3 assists. He's having a great year. He's really stepping it up, especially when guys like Giroud or Ibrahimovic are injured or in bad form. And the problem with Milan is the leaky defense, right? Is the allowing Udinese and other teams to get more shots, on target than they have to score goals. And I think that for a team that is in the upper echelon of the European sector, if you will, or should be, for a team to play like this, it's embarrassing. It's hard to take this AC Milan team seriously, because one day they'll put in a great result and then the next they will tie Udinese. And I'll tell you one thing right now is that AC Milan is not the team I fear in Italy right now. They haven't been for a while. And as good as they are talent-wise with guys like Sandro Tonali and Rafael Leao and Tomori and Mike Maignan, they're not an intimidating squad because of their inconsistency. And it seems, and we'll go into Inter right now, we'll segue into that, it seems that nobody wants to win Serie A right now. Look at Inter and Genoa, 21 shots, 4 on target for Inter. And that just says it all, that simple stat right there. Lack of lethality, it's not being clinical enough. And we are seeing how Inter miss Romelu Lukaku, and further, more down the line, how they miss Antonio Conte. This team was so promising, right? The future looked so bright in Milan, the blue side. And then Conte left, Lukaku left, and now we are left with Edin Dzeko, who, as good as he is and as good as he was, he's getting up there in age and he's just not playing the same. And in addition to that, we saw a great duo between Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku. And now, tear that duo apart, it's really going to affect Lautaro. And again, I'm going to say the same thing for Inter here. It's like, how am I supposed to be afraid of you as another team in Italy, in Serie A, when you are tying Genoa and you're drawing them 0-0. You know, you're throwing the ball at the net, essentially, and you're getting 4 shots out of 21 on target. It's just, again, inconsistencies, a lack of lethality, not scary, not clinical. They're missing that true number 9. And, essentially they're missing Antonio Conte. As much, as good as he is, as bad as he is, as inconsistent as he is with Tottenham, we saw how good he can be at Inter Milan. We know what kind of pedigree he is. And that's just it. Moving on to Juventus versus Empoli. That one ended 3-2. Dusan Vlahovic scored a brace. He is flying. Got a goal in his debut. Goal after that in the Coppa Italia. Funny enough, they're going to play Fiorentina, his former side, in the Coppa Italia, which that'll be exciting to see. I think he's going to really show up for that one. But anyways, now he goes, Empoli scores a brace. In a game that Juve really should have put away far earlier than they did. And this brings the question up. And as a Juve fan, I'm going to have a little bit of a bias. But I tend to ask myself this all the time. Are Juventus good or are they bad? Are they a good team who can win easy matches, who can win against the big boys of Europe? Or are they not? Are they a team that give Empoli, right, a chance to win? Are they a team that either concedes too many or can't score anything? And week in and week out, I find myself, you know, pondering this question. I find myself at a crossroads with this because I just don't know. I think they had the best mercato, the best transfer window in all of Europe this January. I will tout it that highly. Vlahovic scooping him up in January as opposed to getting into a bidding war with English clubs in their deep pockets in the summer was a huge move. Dennis Zakaria for 8 million euros. It's a steal. But then we get to this match and Zakaria gets injured and that old Juve comes back where the midfield is just so flat and lackluster and boring and you're relying on the individual brilliance of your offensive players, whether that be Vlahovic, Dybala, in the past Ronaldo. And, you know, you can't do that. This is supposed to be a team. And it's just Juventus. It's the winningest club in Italian history. You're supposed to be winning these games against a team, newly promoted team, I might add, Empoli. You're supposed to be winning these games 3-4-0, not 3-2. So I'm still struggling with that question, even after their really, in my opinion, really poor Champions League result against Villarreal, 1-1. I'm worried about that return leg. I am, but we'll get into that in another episode. Moving on to Roma versus Spezia. Roma snuck out a 1-0 win with a penalty from Tammy Abraham in the 98th minute. This game, and I saw a TikTok earlier, and it was Roma, the team posted it, social media coordinator, whatever. Anyways. It was a compilation of all of their shots on target and all the posts they hit. And it was shocking. I mean, 31 shots. Stats are right here. 31 shots, 10 on target. And they score in a penalty. And I'm talking like these, you know, the 21 shots that were off target, they did not miss by much. There was a Cristante one. It was a volley, I believe, or a half volley. And it came down and bounced right before going out of play. And it bounced, I want to tell you, centimeters beside the post. And I was like, wow, like this is not their day. This is not their day. This is an unlucky day for Roma. But, you know, despite that lack of luck, if you will, they pull out the win. And this is huge. This is huge for Roma because I want them to do well. I really, really do. I like that Mourinho took a, you know, he took a step backward and he went to a smaller club rather than trying to go for a bigger club and then, you know, getting into a problem and not liking the owner and all that stuff that usually happens with Mourinho and has happened as of late. I like how he took the step to the lower level, to Roma, which is still a very historic club, very big club in Italy, but in need of rejuvenation. And I like how he did it. And I want to see him succeed. So when I look at Roma's results, oftentimes they are drawing games. Oftentimes they are losing against middle table teams or drawing bottom of the table teams or losing to the big boys, obviously, at the top four. But, you know, is that luck? Is it a lack of tactics? Is it Mourinho? Is it the players? Because Roma's squad on paper is fairly good. But, you know, it's not as good as Juventus's or Inter Milan's or AC Milan's, or for that matter, it's probably less than Napoli. So it's still off a little bit. But I'm glad they got the result here, because when I tell you, if you haven't seen it already, go on TikTok and search up AS Roma and watch. I believe it might be their most recent video or their second most recent video. And it is shocking the lack of luck they had in that game. Anyways, moving on to Napoli versus Lazio. Debatably our most exciting game, next to the Juve one, obviously. 2-1, Napoli get the win. Pedro scored an 88th minute equalizer for Lazio. And then Fabian Ruiz scored a 94th injury time winner for Napoli. Fantastic drama. And that win sent Napoli to the top of the table, because both of the Milan clubs, they just don't want the Scudetto. They just don't want the league title. I don't know why. Don't ask me. I don't know. But they just, it seems like they don't want it. So look at the table. We have very, very tight, far more tight than the Premier League. We have Napoli in first, 27 games played, 57 points. Milan, the exact same record. Inter at 26 games played, 55 points. The game in hand, obviously, if they win it, they will jump to first at 58 points. Juventus are at 27 matches played, 50 points. Atalanta 26, 47. Roma 27, 44. You know, Lazio 27, 43 points, and Fiorentina in the mix, 26 games played and 42 points. So that fourth position, it's looking like it's going to be a tight one. Because again, just like the Prem, we have five teams in contention. Now at the end of the day, will Fiorentina be there? Probably not. Will Lazio be there? Probably not. My guess, it'll be between Atalanta, Juve, and Roma, because I don't think that Napoli, Milan, or Inter are not making the Champions League this year. I refuse to believe it. Napoli last year, on the final match day, fell out of the top four, and now they're playing Europa League football. Obviously, Barcelona just knocked them out, but on the final match day, they ended up losing that top four lead, and that is just, if that ain't bad luck, then I don't know what is. But now, obviously, new and improved team, new coach, Spalletti's in there, and they're playing well. Look at the form chart. Napoli, the last five games, they're unbeaten. 3 wins, 2 draws. Milan is close. 2 wins and 3 draws. And then we go to Inter, and it's just, oh my goodness, it's a draw, loss, win in their last five. So, not good stuff from them. But there are signs from Roma, who are unbeaten their last five. There are signs from Juventus, who are unbeaten their last five, who lie in fourth position. So I think along with the Prem, this title race, this top four race, it's not only heating up, but it is looking like one of the most exciting we've seen in recent years. Well, folks, that'll be all for today's episode. We'll see you next week with a special guest to talk about the greatest European clubs of all time. I'm your host, Ben Botello. We'll see you then.